Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Race Recap analysis here on the Cycling Day in Extra Channel. And we've just seen the finish of Paris-Roubaix. What an extraordinary edition of the Hell of a North that was. But as always, I'm joined by Mr. Craig himself, Ewan Wilson. And Ewan, what happened in the 2023 edition of the race?
Well, the 2023 Paris-Roubaix was a fascinating edition. In fact, the fastest edition that there has ever been of this race. It began with a sort of futile breakaway. Sometimes in Roubaix, we think they could possibly go all the way. They did in the Paris-Roubaix Femme on Saturday. But today, it was just a four-man group whose advantage only went to 2 minutes. Nevertheless, back in the peloton, things were tense from the get-go. Teams fighting for position, Ineos Grenadiers, Jumbo Visma, and Albertsen De Koenig occupying the front of the peloton for much of the early part of the day. However, before the Tour d'Arenberg, usually the gateway to this race really opening up, we saw a move off the front from Wout van Aert, Christophe Laporte, Mathieu van der Poel, Stephen Kung, and Mardis Mikkels, the 19-year-old from Intermarché. They went away with just over 100 kilometers to go, which is crucially before Arenberg, as I mentioned. On Arenberg, things got chaotic. It split up the race like it always does, but a big crash marked the sort of dynamic in the main peloton. Our reigning champion, Dylan van Baarle, looked uncomfortable on the floor. I don't know if we have a medical update from him. Hopefully he's okay. And also a couple of other favorites getting wiped out and a couple of contenders in difficulty, including Christophe Laporte from the front group, who suffered a puncture during the Tour d'Arenberg, which meant that he was left out of this front group. During this period, we then saw riders coming back from the peloton, which included a number of teammates from Mathieu van der Poel in Jannie Vermeersch and Jasper Philipsen. Alongside them, Pippo Ganna and plenty of other big contenders, including Mads Pedersen for this race. From there, the group were working well together, taking on every couple sector. Every now and then, we saw a sort of acceleration from Mathieu van der Poel, which was usually matched by Wout van Aert and the other contenders, but that kept the group on their toes. Coming into the Carrefour de l'Arbre, the final five-star sector of the day with 25k to go, there was chaos. At the front of this group of favourites, which was now whittled down to just seven riders, we saw the two Albertsen De Koenig riders left in Philipsen and van der Poel going shoulder to shoulder with John Degenkolb. John Degenkolb is the victim of a crash. He comes down while van Aert accelerates out of the chaos. He gets a small grab over the group, and it's Mathieu van der Poel who closes up. These two up in front, and we thought we were going to have a repeat of the Ronde van Vlaanderen in 2020. However, once we came off the Carrefour de l'Arbre, it becomes apparent that Wout van Aert has a mechanical problem. He takes on a new wheel, whilst Mathieu van der Poel carries on riding up in front. He gains a 30-second advantage, and we're left in a chase for second place between Wout van Aert, Jasper Philipsen, and Mads Pedersen. Mathieu was alone all the way to the end, and he took his first ever Paris-Roubaix victory, a victory that was never taken by either his father or his grandfather in the past, and he becomes the first cyclocross world champion since the 1970s to win Paris-Roubaix. The fight for second place was interesting. Mads Pedersen was dropped, and it was down to just Philipsen and Wout van Aert. This Belgian affair went to Jasper Philipsen, who celebrated for second place like he won Roubaix overall. A fantastic team effort overall for Albertsen De Koenig, who claimed first and second on the day, and third place goes to Wout van Aert.
I mean, you're, as always, Paris-Roubaix, exciting race and a lot of things to unpack there as well. But I think we can't start with anywhere else but Mathieu van der Poel. Sensational ride, as you said, stepping out of the shadows. Well, not really, but in terms of palmares wise, his grandfather and his father. And how much do you think this victory will mean to him?
This victory is going to mean an awful lot for him. He's a guy who really cares about these monuments and getting these big level wins. And Mathieu van der Poel is a big race rider. We've seen it so many times that he always sort of brings the party and the occasion to these top level races like Roubaix. And he's now won Sanremo. He's got his two Ronde victories in the past as well. Getting Roubaix is just another one to add onto this list to put him in the great pantheon of classic riders that we'll be talking about for the next 50 or so years to come. Also, in terms of getting that big sort of psychological advantage over Wout van Aert and over Jumbo Visma and their team dominance as well, will also be a big plus. The reputation we've spoken about over the past couple of weeks that Jumbo Visma can't quite crack Van der Poel, when it comes to these big top dog races. I think that that's going to come as a huge advantage for Alpecin De Koninck, who can look to build on this for the years to come. They've made huge progress this year. They have gained the two big classics that they were missing. And now that they can work towards bigger and brighter things next year in patching up every other sort of classic gap that they have on the Palmares, particularly, dare I say, La Doyenne, Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Yeah, it certainly was a dominant performance. And we saw him attacking so many places. So it wasn't like he was waiting in the wings. He really was trying to animate the race in true Mathieu van der Poel fashion. And yeah, Ewan, but the result here as well, a 1-2 finish. Alpecin have just lit up this race and one of the best team performances we've seen in years.
Yeah, it was. And it was by... It wasn't necessarily by brute force, but by good tactics, really. With Vermeesch and Philipsen being right there early on after that Arenberg split up. And that really just changed the dynamic. They knew they couldn't wait around because if they hung around for too long, then the Jumbo guys would come back behind in Van Hooydonk and La Porte. So the team rode very intelligently. The way they rode this was just was really impressive, and the confidence of them to get 1-2 is mind-boggling. I'm lost for words.
I mean, well, we should probably focus on Wout van Aert as well. This is the second time this year in a monument he's on the third step of a Mathieu van der Poel victory, and they had a lot of bad luck. We saw Delamain Bal crash or whatever it was in the Arenberg Forest. Laporte and them, they wanted to get back, but never really happened. Could they have played it any other way, or was it just... And then, obviously, Wout van Aert had the puncture in the wrong moment. So, not a great day by their standards.
Yeah, maybe Jumbo-Visma, they come into this race a little bit sort of too rigid. They have plans. Plans don't work in Roubaix. You can't kind of come into this race and you do an AI-generated 3D printer tactics that they do everywhere else. We said this in the preview, that just the way that Roubaix works makes that so difficult. It's far less predictable than the other classics that they've dominated. And it happened again this year, that they just sort of missed that mark, whether it's just sort of misfiring of team tactics, being too rigid, but they also just sort of missed out on having riders up there towards the pointy end of affairs in Arenberg. If Nathan van Hooydonk was closer to the front where he could follow Vermeesch, follow Philipsen, the race would have been completely different. Probably would have worked in Wout's favor. I know we can't rectify the fact that he got a puncture in Carrefour de l'Arbre, but in terms of the tactics and the way that the race evolved, that I think is a huge error. I know Dylan van Baarle would have made a big difference, but there are other riders in Jumbo who weren't really there involved. Christophe Laporte had a number of sort of issues of bad luck and so forth. I have some more forgiveness for him, but I think that Jumbo probably should have tried harder in getting the riders up towards the front and marking every single counter move to their initial move with Laporte and Van Aert that went off with 100k to go. They should have been more proactive at following pace and following Philipsen, following all these guys, instead of putting all their eggs and sort of outnumbering guys up in front. Because in Roubaix, as we know, all it takes is one mechanical problem and it changes completely. Alpecin De Koninck were astute to every change. They followed a lot of these moves and they had the guys up there. And you can see that it benefited them throughout the whole narrative of this race from Arenberg until the end.
I mean, one thing that people might talk about as well, we had that crucial moment where, as you mentioned, Degenkolb crashed. Well, there were a few murmurs about that. They thought that Mathieu van der Poel should be disqualified from this, which, yeah, I mean, it's hard in Roubaix. It's not like he did it on purpose. What did you make of that?
I mean, exactly. I think Roubaix is like an anomaly where, I mean, they were on the hardest cobble sector, well, one of the hardest cobble sectors of the day. Having control of your bike 100% on the cobblestones is not guaranteed. They're not on sort of a flat tarmac road where control of your bike is easier and it's also, you have more self-responsibility for your actions. On the cobblestones, it's harder. You're bobbing about. I mean, it's just the nature of the road and the racing. And Degenkolb found himself on the sort of gutter area on the grass. You could say that he should be on the road. He shouldn't be off-road at that point. I don't want to gaslight him into sort of feeling that like he was in the wrong, but I feel like this was more of a racing incident than something that can be purely blamed to one person. I think this just has to be part and parcel with Paris-Roubaix. But even if Mathieu van der Poel were to be disqualified, look who came in second place. It would still be an Albertsen de Koning victory, and there'd still be champagne flowing in their bus.
But yeah, I mean, well done for John Degenkolb to even finish in top 10 still, and looking like the John Degenkolb of old. But Ewan, there's two other riders in that group as well who got career bests. One of them, you said, had no hope in doing anything, but he finished fourth. And then the other one was Philippe Pogano, who many people talked up. So, I mean, for both of them, this is a great step for potentially a better result next year.
Yeah, Maz rode a good race. For him as well, he's never been up there at the pointy end of Roubaix, which is why I said that he might not have a hope, is because he's never been up there in Roubaix before. He's never finished in top 50. But today he discovered the race, he led the bunch onto a lot of cobble sectors, and he built confidence. Maybe in the years to come he can build in this result, but it's a great sort of sign of things to come from Maz Pedersen, who's had a really good classic season. A fourth place here and a third place last week at Ronda. It's fantastic. Similarly with Pippo Ganna in sixth place. I think we can stop sort of working in hypotheticals of what can he do in Roubaix? Could he win? He can easily top 10 in Roubaix. Once the sort of big flair moves went away, though, with Van Aert, Van der Poel, and the others, I was missing something from Ganna and Kung, to be fair. They're just missing that sort of top-level form that I think they would need to probably win this race.
But anyways, that's basically it for our race recap analysis. Make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, check out our cycling podcast, the Echelon Cycling Podcast, where we're going to go a bit more in depth of the race as well. But with that, thank you very much for watching. And of course, as always, have a nice day.